Logan, and thank you once again for loading me down and queuing me up. I'm Finn J.D. John, bringing you another daily episode of the Offbeat Oregon History Podcast, which every weekday brings you another story from the archives of the Offbeat Oregon History syndicated newspaper column. You'll find full details at offbeatoregon.com. Check it out. But first, sit back and relax and let me tell you the story of the soggiest company town in the West, a tiny town called Valsetts, Oregon, which got an incredible amount of rain, was fully owned by the sawmill, which was across on the other side of town, and when the sawmill closed, the company bulldozed the town and lit it on fire, and in 1984, Valsetts ceased to be. This story was first published on March 7th, 2009, under the headline, Company Town of Valsetts Was Soggy But Home. Here we go. How much does it rain where you live? Western Oregon has a reputation for being very soggy. Most of the state's western population centers, Portland, Salem, Eugene, get 30 or 40 inches of rain each year. Now imagine getting 120. There was a town in western Oregon that got an average of 10 feet of rainfall a year. This was actually more than any other town in the country, anywhere in America. Except it really wasn't really a town. And it no longer exists. It was called Valsetts, and it was essentially a mill camp. Couple hundred little houses built on timber company land by a sawmill at which almost everyone in town worked. It was in a little saddle in the middle of the coast range, about halfway between Monmouth and the Pacific Ocean. The story of Valsetts is the story of the lumber industry in Oregon, or most of it anyway. The place was founded in 1919 by the local timber company, which built the mill. At its peak in the 1940s and 50s, more than 1,500 people lived there. In the middle of the coast range, 15 muddy miles of gravel road from civilization in Falls City, if you can call Falls City civilization. If you live in Falls City, you surely do. Valsetts had its own school district, a company store, and a two-lane bowling alley that kind of looked from the inside like a railroad tunnel. Crime was virtually non-existent because the town was so isolated. The town had no police force. It was all private property, so some laws just didn't apply. Kids zipped around on motorcycles long before they turned 16. Valsetts also had its own herd of elk, a lake with more fish than the residents could ever possibly eat, and wild woods everywhere just outside of town. Valsetts was a sportsman's paradise. It wasn't a timber company's paradise, though. Not in the early 1980s. See, the timber industry was getting squeezed hard. The building boom of the 1970s had given way to the stagflation thing and an accompanying recession, and nobody was buying wood. Advances in automation were making it possible to run a mill with a lot fewer workers anyway. Good first-growth trees were getting hard to find, and the Valsetts mill had been converted to a plywood operation. It made no sense at all to try to run a plywood mill, where second-growth dog-hair logs are peeled to cores and glued together, smack in the middle of the best tree-growing climate on the West Coast. Federal forests were virtually shut down to further logging, either for legal reasons or because they'd already been cut over. Boise Cascade, Weyerhaeuser, and Willamette Industries knew that if they were going to survive, it would be on the trees they grew on their own lands. And for Boise Cascade, Valsetts occupied many acres of the very best of those lands. So as other loggers and mill workers around the state were trying to find a new job, the people of Valsetts were put on notice that they'd need to find a new home, too. This was harsh. While other timber workers had at least the equity in their homes to fall back on, Valsetts residents had 6 months to clear out with nothing. Quote, "Now I know how boat people feel," one of them said at the time. Many salvage companies tried to work out a deal with Boise Cascade. But the company wanted the town gone right away so that the land it sat on could get back to work producing logs for other Boise Cascade mills like now. So nothing came of that. And in just a few months, the entire town was bulldozed, dragged into a giant pile of rubble, and put to the torch. Today, the only sign of the town you'll see is a stand of young trees by the side of a dirt road, and the memorial websites former residents maintained to their vanished hometown. Well, that's it for today's episode, and if you're listening for the first time and want more information about Offbeat Oregon history, you can get everything at our central website, our anchor page. That's offbeatoregon.com. It includes the complete catalog of about 190 columns going back to 2008, plus links out to audio and text feeds on RSS and iTunes, and to the Facebook page and Twitter feed, in case you'd like to join the conversation. The website's also where you'll find full citations to sources for this story, which include back issues of the Corvallis Gazette Times, the Sacramento Bee, and the ValsetsHomestead.com site. Our theme music is a track titled Old Man's Waltz by the Atlas String Band, atlasstringband.com, written by Carmen Ficarra. Coming to Corvallis, drop me a line, let's grab a cup of coffee and talk history. I'm at Finn at offbeatoregon.com, or if you do Twitter, at offbeatoregon. This podcast is proud to be in the Creative Commons, and to check out the license it's covered under, CC by SA, by the way, please see offbeatoregon.com/CC. That will do it for today. Coming tomorrow, we'll talk about the McQuinn Strip, which is a piece of the Warm Springs Indian Reservation that the federal government accidentally didn't give to the Indian tribe pursuant to the treaty that it had hashed out with them and tried for 116 years to keep. Finally, Richard Nixon signed the paperwork and they got their land, but it took some doing. Look for that after about 6 a.m. tomorrow morning, and in the meantime, go out and fill up the rest of today with good stuff. Bye now.